No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All righty, welcome back. We are live on another Wisco Fanatics. Not Wednesday this week, but we are live on Thursday. So we have 5 Milwaukee Brewers games today. They are back from the All-Star break. We have 5 games. They were 4-1 in those 5 games, which is a really good week to have coming out of the All-Star break. And then we're also going to go through our trade deadline targets today as well. So strap in. We got four W's and some trade targets to talk about.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
So, like Tyler said, welcome back, everybody. I decided to push the show back. Tyler was kind enough to agree with the EAA yesterday. That was awesome. If you've never been, I highly recommend, if you have small children, give them ear protection because it is very loud, lots of food, but it's awesome. Awesome event to go to. But we are here today to talk about the Milwaukee Brewers. 4 wins this last week, and the best part for me, this may be petty on my part, but the best part for me is that they came against Minnesota and Chicago teams, our bitter rivals. If you just add in Detroit in there for the next series, it would just honestly be the cherry on top, and everything in the world would feel right. But as we always do, we are going to start with our power pair. And for me, I'm going to start it off. I have Jackson Chourio as my power pair hitter. The kid had a week, and he had a tremendous, tremendous 2-game series in Minnesota. He was incredible. Had a couple defensive web gems. He was batting the ball everywhere, hitting the ball hard. But Jackson went 7-for-17 this week, 3 runs, a double, a home run, an RBI, and only 1 strikeout. Only 1 strikeout. That is impressive for a kid that is 20 years old in his rookie season. That is a .412 average, a .412 on base percentage, a .647 slug, and a .1059 OPS. I mean, that's just incredible. With the home run, he got the 10 on the year, so he became the 5th Brewer to have 10 home runs this year. And he joined Ken Griffey Jr. and Bryce Harper as one of the 3 youngest players in Major League Baseball history to have 10 homers and 10 steals in a season. So don't scoff at it. It's incredible. For my power pair pitcher, I went with Jared, and bear with me here. I put it in quotations, the biggest nuts in the room, Koenig, because I don't know what it is. He likes to put himself in trouble to get himself out of it or something. I'm not sure what's going on with him, but he gets out of it every single time, or most of the time, I should say. He had 2 games. He had 1 win. He is 8-1 on the year. He had 1 hold, his 5th hold of the year. He had 2 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 1 K. And I just wanted to give him a pat on the back because during the entire season, he's only giving up a .203 opponent batting average. That's impressive stuff. So my UP, I went with a guy that I think a lot of Brewers fans gave up on too soon, in my opinion. But he is going to be very important on the stretch with recent news about Yelich. He's going to get a lot of playing time. I guess Yelich's back kind of decided what was going to happen with our outfield, sadly to say. But Garrett Mitchell was my UP. 5-for-18, 2 runs, 2 doubles, 2 RBIs, 4 walks. He only had 5 strikeouts. That's a .278 average, a .278 on base percentage. I don't know what's going on with these hitters having the same on base as average, but it is what it is. A 389 slug and a 660 or a 389 slug and a 667 OPS. I apologize. But good week all around for the Brewers, the hitters and the pitchers, and they got a lot of dubs, man. So who is on your list, my guy?
So for I have two pitchers and a position player. So my power position player is Willie Adames. He was 6-for-19 in those five games. 316 batting average. Also drew four walks. One thing that we've talked about but hasn't gotten a lot of coverage as far as Brewers fans, the things that they're talking about, is his plate discipline being much better this year compared to his entire career. So he's got four walks and only five strikeouts.
Mm.
So Willie Adames' plate discipline, you know, say what you will about his batting average, but he's hitting dingers, coming up clutch, and his plate discipline has been much better.
Yes.
For power pitcher, I wanted to give Yoel Piamps credit because the unfortunate thing with trust is that it's much easier to lose than it is to gain.
Very true.
But I think we can go back to putting trust in Yoel Piamps. And when we get to the latest game that he pitched in, I'm going to ask the question, is Yoel Piamps back? So he's pitched five straight scoreless appearances. Across those five appearances, he's pitched 4 1/3 innings, given up one hit, zero walks, six strikeouts, and zero runs.
Nice.
So he's been pretty damn good in his last five appearances. Then my underrated performer, I went with Elvis Baguero. He pitched 2 1/3 innings since the All-Star break. Another guy that guys, you know, Brewers fans just don't seem to give enough credit to. Elvis Baguero is a pretty darn good pitcher. In those 2 1/3 innings, he gave up three hits and a walk, struck out four, and also gave up zero runs. All right, so let's get into this Twins series from over the weekend, also known as Jack Centurio dominating the state of Minnesota. What's the note to you from game one?
What's up, Taylor? How you doing, buddy? Man, the Brewers, we had to wait an extra day to get Brewers baseball after the All-Star break. And they just decided to try to make this feel like an exhausting three-game series in 2 days. Started off with a banger. This one went 12 innings, if you don't know. And the last couple of innings are really when things went absolutely nuts.
Great baseball game.
It was. It was a lot of fun, honestly. You start with Peralta, right? Peralta had one of it. He talked about it the game before the All-Star break that he wanted to have a dominant second half like he did last year. And you two and I, is myself. Hey, I love to hear that, Taylor. I agree with you. Peralta, 6 innings pitched, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 8 Ks. So as you get into this one, you break it down a little bit more. He had 82 pitches through 4 innings. And you're like, man, you got to keep the pitch count down. And that was his problem, and it plagued him for a lot of his starts. He just always has one big inning, or he has a couple innings where it's just like 17, 18 pitches, 15 pitches. And it's like, you got to be going deeper in these games because, you know, we're using our bullpen a lot. Well, to answer that, 82 pitches in 4 innings, he has 10 pitches in the fifth. And you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's going 6 innings. He's going 6 innings for sure. So then he ends up going to 6 innings. And like I said, the 0 earned runs, 6 scoreless innings. You can't ask for anything else out of an ace. Honest to God. Hudson comes in. What did he give up? He gave up a one-out double. And then Peguero came in, spiked a wild pitch that tied the game 1-1. I will go over the scoring in a second here. But give credit to Big Z here, man. Big Z's been better than advertised, in my opinion. He comes in and cleans up the mess that was left on base. I was hurt after that wild pitch. I'm not going to lie to you. So then we get to Piamps. Beautiful choice, by the way, my man. I give you a lot of credit because he looked like Yoel Piamps. Trevor McGill looked like Trevor McGill. And Jacob Junis gave up 1 earned in 2 innings pitch. But, you know, after all the runs that the Brewers ended up scoring in the extra innings, which they scored, this is the first time that they've scored 7 runs in the 10th inning or later since May 7th, 2016, in case you didn't know. Now you do. Now we get to the scoring. So RBIs by 5 different players, Churio and Terang each have multiple, Terang with 3, Churio with 2. We had 7 players with a hit. That's awesome. Contreras and Adames each had 2. And this was Jackson Churio's first 3-hit game. Love that for the kid. This game also started with a rain delay. Forgot to mention that. So we had two rain delay games this week. And then, they, like I said, they decided to go extra innings. So they tried to make a three-game series. Feel like a three-game series. Two games. Right. And the last thing I wanted to say here, I wanted to say a quote from Pat Murphy. He said, "This was a relentless win if there ever was one." And I love that quote. I feel like he's one of those people that when he says stuff, you're just like, dude, that'd be a sick tattoo, man. Like, he just has that feel about him. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to leave some stuff for you because I feel like I'm taking all the meat off the bone here, but go ahead, buddy.
Nope, you don't have to worry about me. I promise you I'm going to get into it. I'm glad you mentioned the rain delay because we talked about this a little bit with Tuesday night. We were supposed to have a watch party, and then rain unfortunately canceled that plan. Mm-hmm. But the effects of a rain delay on the starting pitcher that is scheduled.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to be like rolling up and then ready to go. And then, okay, no, we're not starting. And then you don't know when you're going to start. So then do you stay warm? Do you cool down and then re-ramp up? Like it messes a lot with your preparation.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no other sport like that where you're stopping if there's rain. You know, if there's football, you're not stopping if there's rain. They might stop if there's, you know, monsoon and lightning and all that. But if it's just raining or snowing, like, you're not stopping. Baseball is different. If it's something like that, and then again, like Tuesday night, ended up being an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a tough thing to stay ready and prepared for the scheduled starting pitcher. Yeah, Taylor, no regrets. So, you know, not even a single letter. But looking at the Brewers offense, I had three takeaways from the Brewers offense. One, actually, credit to the Twins defense. That's my first thing. They had several hits that they took away from the Brewers. They played good defense. Also, Bryce Durang had a hit to the wall. That would have been a home run in five ballparks and had an expected batting average of 420.
Oh, nice.
So the Twins played good defense to their credit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Sal Frelick, much better. Yep, Taylor got the reference. I appreciate that. Sal was much better at the plate. He's been much better at the plate. He struggled on the bases, getting picked off twice. In the top of the ninth inning, I thought he was safe, but unfortunately the Brewers were out of challenges. So,
yeah.
You know, he got picked off twice technically, but had the Brewers had a challenge, I think he would have been safe on the one in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, just looking at the Brewers' approach, I want to give big credit to the batting approach of three players specifically. Sal Frelick and Willie Adames, great battles in the second and fourth innings, both to get on base. And Jackson Chourio to hit not one but two inside fastballs to right field. This was in the video that I made for Jackson Chourio on Monday. Him doing things like that at 20, that's stuff that, like, earlier in the season, we were happy to see Blake Perkins and Bryce Turang doing those things. Those are things that William Contreras and Christian Yelich do that are like, okay, those are veteran hitters. Those guys know what they're doing. Jackson Chourio is doing that at 20.
He's not doing it
in double A. He's not doing it in triple A. He is 20 at the major league level, taking 96 mile an hour fastballs on the inside corner and hitting them to right field.
Yeah.
I am not joking at all when I say that Jackson Chourio absolutely has superstar potential.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we've talked about Garrett Mitchell, and we believe that he has star potential.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Chourio has superstar potential. And we're seeing it already.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to maybe plant this seed now. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Jackson Chourio is the face of the team as early as next year.
Oh, he could. I mean, that's I would agree that the trajectory that he's going right now and everything that we've heard coming on into this year, I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he's an all-star next year. I'm not even gonna lie.
That's fair. I could see that. No, I can totally see that.
In little Milwaukee.
All right. So, all in all, Brewers had the Twins on the ropes a couple times.
Yep.
And they responded. Obviously, old pal Carlos Santana got them. But Brewers rallied, and then they're like, all right, we scored one, and that wasn't enough to get the win. We scored two, that wasn't enough to get the win. What if we just score five?
Yeah.
See if they can keep up with that.
Yeah.
And that was enough. The Twins got one back, but Jackson Chourio also called game in this one with his diving catch to end it.
He did call game.
All right, let's go to game two, and let's talk about Sunday's win.
So Sunday's win, we start with the pitching. So Savali's on the mound. He goes 4 1/3, 4 hits, 5 earned runs, 4 walks, and 4 Ks. And I know you have thoughts on that, so I'm going to pause.
Sure do.
Okay. Now, I do want to say that he could probably do a little bit better job getting ahead in counts. That's something that has helped Tobias Myers. And sure. Savali was 12-21 on first pitch strikes. So getting yourself behind against a team that, you know, is aggressive. And the Twins are a good team. They're in second place, but they're a good team. You got to do a little bit better job. So again, Big Z, 2/3 of an inning, got us through the fifth inning, 0 hits, 0 walks, 1 K. I mean, he just comes in and does his job, man. Honestly, he could be underrated. He could have been an underrated performer, this week, in my opinion.
Do that.
Bryce Wilson, inning pitch, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, 1 K. Koenig did his thing, and Peguero. So we have to have a discussion about Elvis Peguero in this game. Single, walk. There's 0 outs.
That's 6, 7, 8 in the order also.
Oh, after shit.
One of them was a pinch hit.
You're saying, oh, shit, if you're a Brewers fan, okay? He then locks down, turns the hat backwards, sits up in the chair. It's time to lock in, boys. He gets a pop out the center and back-to-back Ks. What a freaking boss, dude. What a freaking boss.
I'm picturing a certain Sam Cassell gif.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Yeah, if you get it, you get it.
Trevor McGill locked this one down. But now we go to the offense. So first thing I wrote down and made myself laugh a little bit, this game felt like the Boss Hoss and Action Jackson Chourio had a personal vendetta against the Twins. They were shitting on them the entire game. Our first hit of this game for the Brewers was a home run in the third with 2 outs from the Boss Hoss. He also had a single in the fifth that scored Chourio. Chourio had a double in the gap to left center. That ended up scoring Mitchell. I forgot to write down the other one, but I wanted to point out that Mitchell got on base right before Chourio with a bunt single.
Yes, he did.
So for him to get on with a bunt single, then Jackson Chourio to be like, you're going to score. That was awesome. Chourio had back-to-back days with crazy catches. Wanted to point that out.
Yep.
His catch on Sunday versus the Twins was number 7 on the SC Top 10.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I saw that ball slicing, and I'm like, there's no way he's going to catch that. And then all of a sudden, he's walking away with the ball, and I'm like, damn, he caught that. All right.
I think my favorite part of that play was that Brewers fan, like, yeah, going crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome. I just want to say that Jackson Chourio also had a disgusting home run in this game. 443 dude. Feet upper deck.
Yeah.
So go back before I continue to stumble over my words here. We talked earlier in the season when Chourio was struggling about his average against fastballs. And we both agreed he has to hit the fastball. He's not missing the goddamn fastball right now. And it is hurting pitchers. They were able to blow fastballs by him. He was really sitting on the curveballs and the sliders and all the breaking stuff. And he was doing okay at that. So if you're a Brewers fan and you know baseball, you should be like, okay, he's got this down, because usually that's the stuff that the young guys struggle with, is the breaking stuff. So if he's got that down, all he has to do is catch up to the fastball. Allah, he caught up to the fastball, and he hit it 443 feet. That was very high in the zone. I couldn't believe that he hit that, honestly. That was almost as high in the zone as you're going to get for it to be a strike. I mean, now, honestly, umps will call strikes that are higher than the zone. We understand that. But that was still in the zone that you see on TV, and he still crushed that thing. So, honestly, crazy job. Also point out, again, back-to-back days with 7 Brewers with a hit. And Hoskins and Chourio both had 2 hits, so back-to-back days for Chourio with 2 hits. And Haas had three hits. So, I mean, everybody was chipping in against the Twins, and the Brewers scored eight runs in back-to-back days, man. Three straight wins after this one. Goes back to early July since they've done that.
All right, I like that. And then, you know, they have a couple of slower offensive games, and then people are like, oh, the offense always sucks. And it's like...
Never fails, dude. It never fails.
You know, it's not like they're top seven in runs per game or anything.
Nope.
You know, couldn't be that the opponent has good pitching.
Nope.
Couldn't be possible.
Could be a division game. No.
Nope. Couldn't be a team that's fighting to try to stay in the playoff race.
Or their manager just knows our entire roster because he has been with us for how long? No, none of that.
Yeah, none of that's possible. And here's the thing. We have to have this conversation once in a while. Mm-hmm. It's something that should be common knowledge when we're talking about sports and we're talking about two sides who are competing. The other side has a say in the outcome also.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
Oh. Okay.
Because they're also trying to win the game. It's not just, okay, the Brewers have scored eight runs in back-to-back games like they did against the Twins, and then they struggle on offense, that it's the Brewers suck on offense. Like, the other team is trying to keep them from scoring runs too.
Yeah.
So this game specifically, we got a great soundbite from Pat Murphy, one that I will continue to bang the drum for. Because it's something that we've talked about, and it's something that is really, it's really important, and I just want to throw it out here again. So I'm just going to play this, and then we can talk about it again.
Secret so far, nearly 100 games in.
Well, it's about people. That's what it's about. You know, you can talk about talent, you can talk about experience, you can talk about payroll, you can talk about a lot of things, big market, small market, but when you have the right people, you got a chance to compete.
I said this when we talked about trading away Willie Adames. I said this when we talked about adding Trevor Bauer because people didn't stop bringing it up. When you are a small market team in a league where the money is not even, the biggest advantage that a small market has is their people. I've said it multiple times throughout April, May, June, and then at a baseball game towards the end of July, Pat Murphy said it while being interviewed on national television.
Hmm. Weird how that works, huh? That guy's been around baseball for a long time, by the way.
Longer than I've been alive. So I'm glad that Pat Murphy said that, and we can revisit that anytime we want. Now... You are right. I did have some thoughts on Aaron Civale. I thought he pitched well. I thought he got unlucky a couple times because in the bottom of the second, he should have had a strikeout.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bring like the pictures of the strike zones, but I wish I had because I could then like illustrate this a little bit better. But he should have had a strikeout in the bottom of the second. And then Bryce Terang and Willie Adames having kind of a bad exchange let the first two runs in. So that's two runs there. And then later on in the game, between that and the should have been strikeout, James, what's up? That led to four of the five runs scoring, essentially, because it happened again later on. Another should have been strikeout ended up as a home run, and four of the Twins' five runs had come after what should have been strikeouts.
Yep.
So I felt like Aaron Civale was more unlucky than bad as far as Sunday's game was concerned. Now, you already mentioned Churio had an insane day, offense and defense. Rhys Hoskins potentially heating up. Eric Haas staying hot. And then you mentioned Elvis Aguero dealing with some traffic, but he trusted his stuff and got out of it. That's great work by him. James asked, what's the schedule going to be like when the NFL season starts? We are going to be Packers on Tuesday nights and everything else on Wednesday afternoons. So that's the schedule right there, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Okay. You ready to talk about beating Chicago? Okay. Well, we don't get to talk about game one quite yet, but
one second. I have one thing I forgot to say, and it's a quote from Pat Murphy. I was really going through the quotes because I really believe that he's a very wise person. So Pat Murphy on Jackson Churio, this is immediately after the Twin Series. He said, these two games, you'd walk away saying, wow, that kid deserves $150 million. Like, we got him cheap if you watch these two games. He's having fun. And that is absolutely got to hit with Wisconsin sports fans right now. With everything going on, there is two sides. Churio was struggling at first, and everybody's like, ooh, the $80 million, or he got $80 million, right? Am I thinking of him? Yeah. They always say the other thing for Yelich. I'm sorry. So, the $80 million man, blah, 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 right? Well, Pat Murphy over these last two games is like, man, that kid's worth way more than $80 million. Yeah. If you're in that clubhouse and you understand that he's going to get better, in 2-3 years, he's going to be a bargain.
Yeah.
He might be a bargain right now. He's carrying our offense.
I'm actually going to pull it up right now. I'm going to go and see while you give your takeaways for game one. Okay. I'm going to see. So he's on a contract. He's on a contract. For 8 years, $82 million, right? So he's earning about $10 million a year.
Yeah.
Fangraphs already has his value this season at $13.5 million. It's year one, and he's already outperforming his contract.
20 years old. He's 20 years old.
Oh man,
that is absurd. The guy can't even legally buy a Miller Lite. He's worth $13.5 million in baseball.
Today, and there's like 2 months left of the season.
Yeah, dude,
that number is going to go up. That number is going to go up.
Man, that's insane. So we switch gears from beating a
West. I like it. Okay. Here's the thing. It's probably a race for second place.
Yeah, Paul.
At this point, NL Rookie of the Year is going to be a race for second place. I don't think baseball is ever going to consider splitting Rookie of the Year into, Rookie Pitcher of the Year and Rookie of the Year and just having, two distinctions for it.
I mean, they probably
like they have MVP and Cy Young, give it to the most valuable pitcher, basically.
You could just do Rookie Cy Young and Rookie of the
Year. Or name it after some other pitcher who was an insane rookie.
Yeah.
Call it the Randy Johnson Pitcher Rookie of the Year.
Whatever.
Call it that. And separate it. But, yeah, unfortunately, it's probably going to be a race for second place after Paul Skenes.
Although I will say, I'm pretty sure Churio would rather choose a team success over Rookie of the Year. But I don't think he would shy away from Rookie of the Year.
Right.
But, yeah, he's I don't want to say definitely because that sounds rude, but he's probably not.
Outside of Paul Skenes getting hurt, like he's gonna win it.
Yeah, and we don't want that, by the way.
Right.
Paul Skenes is awesome. I love Paul Skenes.
We like him.
He's on the Pirates for the next six years, but until he goes to the Dodgers or New York, and then either have to hate him or dislike him from a distance. But yeah, it's probably Paul Skenes. Although love the optimism, Wes.
Yes. I do think he's gonna be in the conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk Brewers Cubs. We get the loss out of the way, and then we get two dubs. So let's start with game one.
Okay. So we had the Chicago feeling good about ourselves, and Tobias Myers was feeling good about himself too. He went 5 1/3 innings pitch, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 6 Ks. Hobie Milner, got to say, awesome work, dude. 2 2/3 innings pitch, only 2 hits, 1 walk, and 2 Ks. I mean, Hobie Milner needed a good outing, and he ate some innings, and he – did his job. He looked like Hobie Milner, and that was very nice to see. Yep. If you're going to take some takeaways, you take away that Hobie Milner looked good. Joel Pineapps, even though it was only 1/3 of an inning, he looked fantastic. And Tobias Myers is still a really good rookie pitcher. I told you this. He was his own worst enemy. He had a double play that would have saved him a ton of pitches and a run. There was a couple other defensive miscues. The offense, we had the bases loaded a couple times, and we grounded into a double play. And it was just the Brewers just didn't cash in back-to-back innings with bases loaded, and Myers and the defense kind of hurt themselves. The Brewers were 1-for-9 runners in scoring position. The Cubs were 2-for-10 in this game. Credit to Willie Adames, though. He hit a home run 396 feet to center field. His 68th RBI of the year, 16th home run of the year. He leads the Brewers. I know. I was so close.
Yeah, I know. I was so badly wanted to hit him a two-run home run.
If it would have been 69, I would have been like, all right. But, you know, when that happens, it will happen. Probably tonight, I would assume. Tomorrow, maybe. Tomorrow. Jesus, they don't play today. It's Thursday. I'm so messed up right now. This feels weird doing it on a Thursday. It doesn't feel right. But, you know, you lose 1-3 after winning 2 in Minnesota, and you don't get down on yourself because you understand it's baseball, and you're like, let's just go out there and do it again tomorrow, and that's how I felt.
Yeah, so again, Tobias Myers, kind of similar to Aaron Civale, his last outing on Sunday. It felt, you know, like not a bad outing, just some bad defensive plays, and, you know, that's just kind of what it came down to. As far as Tobias Myers goes, I know this is something that I've hammered on with Tobias Myers, is when he gets around that 70 to 75 pitch mark. That seems to be the spot that if he gets through that section of his pitch count cleanly, that's when he has those really, really dominant outings where he's, you know, going like 6, 7, 8 innings, giving up like 1 or 0 earned runs and having really good outings. Mm-hmm. I still think this outing was pretty good, but just he got into that little bit of trouble there again. I will say the Brewers' offense, their approach, not mad at it at all. The first couple innings, they made Javier Assad, who was fresh off the injured list, they made him work. He had to throw 76 pitches to get through 3 1/3 innings. That's a lot of pitching. He threw 6 walks, a career-high 6 walks.
Yeah.
So the Brewers made him work. This is what I put in my notes was defensively, the Brewers used their web gems versus the Twins, and they need to lock back in, except for Joey Ortiz and Rhys Hoskins. They had one play in the bottom of the 5th inning where they did a really great job. Joey Ortiz made a nuts backhand throw over to first base, and Rhys Hoskins picked it.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, the Brewers just needed to lock back in on defense. Just have to be better on all fronts the next day. It's really what it boils down to. Gary Mitchell did have 2 hits in this game. And then the last thing I didn't, you know, really disagree, you know, it kind of is what it is. But in the top of the 9th inning, would you have pinch hit Eric Haas for Bryce Terang or William Contreras in the 9th inning looking for a home run?
With you got to take yourself back in the mindset of Haas just having two home runs the day before.
Right.
I probably would have made the move in that moment in time if I'm judging myself, but I don't like agree or disagree with anything that.
Right. Happened. And that's what I have written down after the question was that I get that we have the hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I might have pinch hit him for Bryce Terang just because Terang was going through a little bit of struggles. But now we saw the next 2 days, Bryce Terang come in clutch in those moments. So
we did.
It's just one of those things where you just kind of you have to be patient. You have to take good with the bad. You have to just take the ebbs and the flows of a baseball season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they do decide to make that decision at that moment, they could have put on Jermán Asterio at second base. Like, there would have been options. So it is what it is. That was just a question that I thought I'd ask. But we get down to it. Okay. Game 2 of the game that started eventually, it was supposed to start at 7:05, ended up starting at 8:30. Hashtag put a roof on it. But what stood out to you from game 2 on Tuesday?
So I'm going to reiterate what you just said. If you have children, please plug their ears. Get a fucking roof. Are you kidding me right now? Are you freaking kidding me right now?
Just one of the most recognizable sports brands in all of sports. But,
dude, at this point, all those big market teams – you need a retractable roof. I don't give a shit.
It doesn't even have to close your entire stadium.
Yeah.
Just get like just a shell. Just get a retractable shell.
Yeah.
You could still have the sides open. Like it might not be the best thing for fans, but it's also not gonna stop fans from sitting in their seats.
Right.
Like
I don't understand. It's honestly something needs to be implemented because you get into situations like this where, you know, you're getting later into the season now. Now, I understand that it's still July, but you have August and September. This is the last series that the Brewers have against the Cubs, so you can't just make a doubleheader later in the season if we have a series with them. They had to play these games. Now, they could have made the next day a doubleheader, but Is that really necessary? They could. They don't want to really want to take away an off day for the Brewers, who are leading their division and making a playoff in a playoff race right now. So, just is
the Cubs are off today, so like they could have moved it back to today.
Okay. Well,
the Cubs are in Kansas City tomorrow, so like it wouldn't have been bad, and the Brewers are at home, so it wouldn't. They could have moved it to today, I guess.
I guess. Okay. Well,
it still messes with everybody's preparation.
Right.
Like we talked about with Freddy Peralta on Saturday. Like everybody's ready to go, warmed up and everything. And then, nope, just kidding.
Yeah. And our preparation, we put in all that hard work. Those bastards. So here we go. Got to give you credit, buddy. We did give everybody a little pregame show preview, I guess I'll say. And Tyler, you said it was going to be a pitcher's duel. And in my opinion, it doesn't get more pitcher duely than a 1-0 baseball game. So it's pretty pitcher duely in my opinion.
I might just be a dude that has a podcast, but, you know, I know stuff sometimes.
You know some things and stuff and things and more stuff.
I do research on the stuff that I talk about, I promise.
You do. So we got to talk about Colin Ray. Still started this game, you know, as it started an hour and a half late. Still gave us five innings, a four-hit baseball, and zero earned runs. And the pitching had zero earned runs, and it was awesome. He had two walks and eight strikeouts.
Eight
strikeouts from Colin Ray.
Pre-game show, his strikeouts are up in his last six games. He had six, seven, eight strikeouts in his in three of his last six games. Then he comes back with another eight.
That's pretty disrespectful from Colin Ray. Hudson comes in, locks shit down, inning pitch, no earned runs, no walks. And 1K, Peguero comes in, looks like Elvis Peguero. Koenig comes in. All right. I'm not going to say he looked like Koenig, but he looked like Koenig from this week. Where he was just like, yeah, man, I really feel like just stressing myself out. Like, I just want to, you know, pass out, and then I'll just eventually get out of it. But on a serious note, Chris Hook goes in there and he talks to him. Contreras goes up to the mound and talks to him, and he gets out of it, dude. So all the credit to not just Koenig. Now, this might be something that I have to work on personally. I give a lot of credit to the players that are doing it. Give more credit to everybody surrounded, the defense locking in, Contreras going up there and talking to him, Chris Hook going up there and talking to him. We got to give credit to the entire team. And, man, this was a fucking win, dude. This win felt like – okay, didn't want to use this reference, but I'm going to, because a lot of people have sour taste on Aaron Rodgers. But do you guys remember when Aaron Rodgers went into Chicago and he said, I own you all my effing life, I owned you? I'm going to be honest. After this win and after Jared Koenig did that in eighth inning, I was like, we own these bums. We own these mother effers. And we go into Chicago with our tiny little payroll and our tiny city, when they always talk shit about us and they say that our city sucks and our state sucks and who wants to go to Wisconsin? All of you people do, by the way, in the summertime. Stop going to Wisconsin Dells and all that stuff if you don't like Wisconsin or Door County. I don't want to hear about it. We go in there and we smack the shit out of you every year, and I love it. I love it.
And they stole our manager. Todd, I will say, Chris Hook and Jim Henderson, they get their flowers from us. I promise. Michael asked the question, Brewers are a leading team in the Fetty sweepstakes. Well, we have to give up one more starter. Makes sense. Michael, I promise we will get to that question. So if you can, tune into the replay or tune back in a little bit when we get to our trade targets. But, yes, we will answer that question. Todd has been underappreciated. You know, Chris Hook is – his impact on the Milwaukee Brewers since joining the team in 2019 cannot be understated.
No, it cannot. Two more things to go over, and I'll give you the floor here. Clutch single from Bryce Durang with two outs in the eighth inning. After Bowers got on, he hit a single off a curveball. So give credit to Jake Bowers for getting on base, and give credit to Bryce Durang for coming through. You were just talking about it. He was a guy that was struggling at the plate for a little while there, and he ended up getting the clutch hit. So, you know, hats off to Pat Murphy as well in this situation. Just trust his guy. You give him enough hacks,
yes,
he's going to figure it out. Bryce Durang is too talented, man, to not figure it out. So guy who's an all-star snub. I'm sure he's wearing that chip on his shoulder for the rest of this season. So awesome job by him. This was the seventh shutout by the Brewers and the fifth on the road, so you love that. Hey, Todd, we try our best, man. We try our best. I'm just trying to follow Tyler's lead, man, because he be saying some smart shit, and I'm like, damn, I want to say some smart shit, man. Make me do
Thank you, Todd. And I wrote it down. I will look and see at what I can put together. I will do some sort of Chris Hook appreciation. I have it in the back of my mind that I want to do a graphic of some sort of a pitching lab to have Chris Hook and Jim Henderson on it. But
wheels are turning now live on the show. Damn it.
So I wrote down Chris Hook, and I'll see what I can do to get the fans to realize that this man has a giant part of what the Brewers have done.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Koenig is 30, by the way. Tobias Myers is 26 and has gone through three different organizations before making it to the Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about finding diamonds in the rough and why when the Brewers bring in a guy like Dallas Keuchel or a guy like Aaron Civale and we're like, oh, okay, so here's something that, you know, other people might not appreciate, but the Brewers might see some hidden value in. Or a guy who's now being brought to a contender for the third time. Unfortunately, he's going to the Dodgers, but the Brewers have brought him in twice, is Jordan Lyles, a guy who is just gives up like an 8 ERA, and then he comes to the Brewers and he pitches to like a 3.50 ERA. The Brewers, what they can do with pitching is unparalleled, in my opinion. So Todd said those two in weeks have been a major reasons for the new aggressive approach. And Pat Murphy is obviously the conductor of that train.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to talk about with Pat Murphy, you gave Pat Murphy credit for sticking with Bryce Durang. I want to give Pat Murphy credit for sticking with Jared Koenig in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
So Jared Koenig got the bases loaded against him with two outs, I believe. Yes, a two-out single and a two-out walk, got the bases loaded with two outs. Trevor McGill was warming up at that point.
Yep.
And Pat Murphy's faced with a decision. He's tried to use Trevor McGill for four out saves multiple times, and both times it's backfired.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also got a guy who's in, has put three runners on base, and then brings the question, do I stick with Koenig or do I try a third time with Trevor McGill and tempt fate? And he stuck with Jared Koenig. Koenig got out of it. McGill came in the ninth and shut it down. Todd asks, do you think they take a chance on James Paxton?
I'm going to say no because D.L. Hall is getting kind of close coming back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. If after the trade deadline, like, they don't get anybody and they're still looking for another starter, like, maybe. But I think at that point, too, like, yeah, I agree with you on D.L. Hall. And we still got to see what's going to happen with Joel Ross.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be getting – I mean, what they say, they said about Devin Williams, so that's going to bump everybody up and help the bullpen as well. They said Devin Williams needs to pitch there three, four times in AAA. I think he's pitched there twice now. So
something like that.
We're going to be getting him back within the next week and a half.
Yeah. I would say they'd have to be kind of desperate to take on James Paxton. They're not going to claim him off of waivers because then they'd have to pay his salary, so he has to clear waivers and elect free agency. If he clears waivers and elects to accept an assignment to AAA, then he'd still stay with the Dodgers. But they'd have to get kind of desperate to go for James Paxton, I think.
Yeah.
But, like you mentioned, Bryce Durang broke up the pitcher's duel in the eighth, a guy who needed a big hit. Mm. And I've got to give credit to Jameson Taillon. He pitched like a stud. He pitched really well. I tip my cap to James Paxton for going 7 1/3 inning and only giving up one run. That's to a team that is top seven in runs per game. That's a good job by him. It's not the Brewers sucking because they can't score runs.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. for simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
That's the opponent has impact on the game that happens as well. Yeah. So, Jameson Taillon, you pitch for the Cubs. That sucks, but good job. Last thing. I showed Jake what my notebook says. I'm not going to show it here because it has a bad word on it. But when we talk about bunting, if you've watched our show before, you probably know how I feel about it. There are four, and I will now add a fifth player that is allowed to bunt, being Christian Yelich, Sal Frelick, Bryce Durang, Blake Perkins, and I will now allow Garrett Mitchell to try to bunt for hits. Don't bunt for outs. It's stupid. Stupid to bunt for outs, to give opponents outs on purpose. I hate it. I hate it. The only time that it makes sense is if you are the home team that is in a tie game where you only need to score one run. Because in every other situation, you should be trying to score as many runs as possible, not one, which is what the Brewers were trying to do in the top of the ninth inning. They were trying to score one run. And I'm glad that Pat Murphy was not happy about this either, because he went off about it after the game. This was a player thing, where Joey Ortiz was trying to lay down a bunt to get Sal Frelick and Willy Adames to second and third, which would have been with one out, and he popped it up. So not only did you not move the runners over, but you also gave the defense a free out.
Yep.
Joey Ortiz, do not take the bat out of your hands. Joey Ortiz has a great bat. We've seen him come up with some big hits for the Brewers. Like, don't take the bat out of your own hands, dude. I trust you, Joey Ortiz. Deliver a hit in that situation.
Yeah.
Also believe that Joey Ortiz, while I wouldn't categorize him as a fast player, I also wouldn't categorize him as slow. Like, not a guarantee that even if you hit a ground ball, that you're going to get doubled up. And then you could still have first and third with one out. But you get that popped up bunt, a strikeout and a flyout, and it ends runners at first and second with nobody out. Yeah. But after the game, Pat Murphy got on the guys in the clubhouse about bunting and base running mistakes, and it is what it is, and it's good to see that Pat Murphy can be able to be constructive, firstly, and also come to the guys about being in positions where he knows that they are capable of more. And that's where we have to come down to, and I don't like using the word criticism because it has negative connotations, but it has to be constructive. It has to be coming from a place of I'm telling you that I'm not happy with what you're doing because I believe that you are capable of more.
Yep.
If Jake and I are having a meeting of some sort and I'm saying, like, Jake, you suck, like, your show stuff, all your notes today sucked, is Jake going to do better next week? But if I say, hey, Jake, like, I know you know your stuff and I know that I can challenge you to bring more, Jake takes that as I believe that he's capable of more. And then he'll want to bring that out.
That is true.
Not saying that as something that's ever happened before, but you know. It is a two-way street. Jake's done the same thing for me as well. Okay. So I wanted to have that discussion. Sorry to single you out like that. But like I said, it's a two-way street. We've had conversations back and forth.
Hey, they say iron sharpens iron, so I'm not upset about it at all.
Exactly what I was going to say, so good job.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Let's go to yesterday's game.
All right, so yesterday's game. So if you go to the Twin Series, I usually do this. I'm a weirdo, maybe.
Tough love. And that's – even Todd, even the phrase tough love once in a while gets kind of a bad rap just because it's not – we want it to be constructive. We want to be like building each other and constructing and growing, which is how Jake and I talk to each other. And we do it because we both want what's best to continue to grow our show, our platforms.
So I'm just going to go off on a tangent for a sec. I listen to a guy. His name is Gary Vaynerchuk. He calls himself Gary V. And one thing that he talks about that I absolutely love and I try to adopt in my life is called kind candor. So if you know what candor is, it's basically people being blunt, right? And when people say they're being blunt about a situation, they're like, it's basically, and this is how I interpret it, he doesn't say this, it's basically an excuse for people to just try to be assholes.
Let's say like, the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, like I'm just being blunt with you. It's the same thing as those people being like, no, I'm being realistic. You know, it's not sunshines and rainbows and all that stuff, right? So kind candor, how he phrases it, is you could tell people the truth, but you don't have to be an asshole about it. And that's what I appreciate most about Tyler. Maybe not the most, but there's a lot of stuff I appreciate about Tyler. Tyler's a great friend, great guy. So you should follow our show just because Tyler's such a good guy. But kind candor is something that I really do try to practice. I try to tell people the truth and be honest with people, you know, because honesty, you know, really is the easiest thing to talk about. And to be kind about it, because you never know what somebody's going through, right? So just kind candor, man. We need to practice that. And you never know, man, if you just be nice to somebody and tell them the truth while being nice, you might make their day. And then they're going to spread it on, and it's just going to keep going, going, going. So let's just be good people, be nice, okay? Now, I'm going to talk about the Brewers not being nice to the Cubs because that makes me laugh. It makes me feel good because it's just sports. It's not real life, okay? It's fine. It's just sports. So the Brewers, like I was saying, I always look forward in the next series to look at the pitching matchups, and I kind of start thinking in my head like, who are they going to have? What's going to happen in this game? This could be interesting. This would be a good matchup for this guy. Could be a tough matchup for this guy. So it kept saying to be determined for the Brewers, and I was like, that's kind of a tell that they don't have a starter named. And it was a bullpen day, and we've seen this before. This is nothing new for the Brewers, but Big Z started this one in the first inning, and the Cubs were kind of going off on him a little bit, four hits and an earned run, but he got out of it. So respect to him, he got out of it. Suzuki absolutely missed the ball off of Wilson in the next inning. But you know what? It makes me feel so good that the Brewers ended up winning this game because they were probably talking so much shit after Suzuki hit a home run. Yes, Wilson ends up going four innings, gives up an earned run. The one hit was the home run, and three Ks. Jacob Junis, three innings, a hit, and Piamps was locked down. And I know you want to have a discussion, so I'm going to hit the pause button on that real quick, as my dog wants to be part of the, our show now. RBIs in this one are Contreras, Turang, and Churio. I mean, Jackson Churio, dude, and Bryce Turang. If those two start heating up, that alone, I mean, Jackson Churio is already on fire. I don't know how much more on fire he can get. I meant to say, if Turang and Contreras can get on fire, that will make up for the yelling missing time.
Yeah.
We need Turang, and we need Contreras to get back to where he was in May to keep us afloat, you know, above the division. Brewers on a great pace right now for win total and playoff seeding, so I kind of want to stay there. That's a pretty comfortable spot. Here's something for you. I thought it was hilarious that after the game that Greg Counsell, I'm going to call him Greg because I don't care. Both teams scored five runs in this series, and the Brewers took two of those games. And the first thing that he says is the pitching was great, but we have to score more runs. I'm like, dude, both teams scored five runs. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about right now. So I was just trying to take a little bit deeper dive into it, and I was looking, and the Brewers, runners in scoring position, I told you they were 1-for-9 in game one. They were 1-for-8 in the second game, and they were 3-for-10 in the third game. That's 5-for-27. That's not good. That's not good at all. But that's a 185 average. The Cubs, 2-for-10 in game one, 0-for-5 in game two, and 1-for-4 in game three. So it tells me two things. So that's 3-for-19. That's a 157 average. One, respectfully, if you talk shit about the Brewers not hitting a scoring position, you shut the hell up because we had more chances and it ended up being the reason we won two games out of the three. Two, the Cubs overpay for a lot of players because they suck at hitting with runners in scoring position. Also, they struck out a fuck ton. Sorry for cussing. I'm getting amped up here. They struck out a freaking shit ton for all the money they paid for this lineup. And for all the noise that I heard all offseason about the Brewers are going to suck. They have no pitchers. They lost Corbin. You think Jackson Churio is better than PSA? I'm not even going to touch that subject because I already bodied a few people. Okay. I'm not even going to touch that right now because I'll really go off. But holy crap, dude. How delusional can Chicago fans be? Every time that I think it's reaches height, they just go farther, dude. It just makes zero sense to me. The Brewers are better than the Cubs. The Bucks are better than the Bulls. The Packers obviously own the Bears. And Wisconsin has had their trouble with Illinois over the past couple of years in different sports. But as an overall standpoint, we own you too. So just deal with it, Chicago.
All right. So I'll say again, Big Z in the first inning was one strike away from ending the inning without any runs. Bryce Wilson did a good job to finish the second, coming in with second and third with one out, and did a good job to not allow a run there. Top of the fifth inning, the umpiring got a little iffy at best. The strike zone got iffy at best. A couple really wide strikes in that inning, and then no obstruction call on Blake Perkins trying to dive into second base. Literally the thing that they're trying to take out of the game, which is really unfortunate that it's not reviewable, because that was such a thing that they put so much emphasis on of getting out of the game, is guys being in the base paths. And here's the thing. It's not only to protect the runner that's trying to dive into the base.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when we posted the video of it, people were like, oh, sliding feet first. I bet a cleat to the ankle would make him stop doing that. We're talking about a very isolated incident. So we're talking about one obstruction call that should have been made. You know, it's not like this is happening three times a game where you can just cleat somebody's ankle and then they won't do it the next two times. It's something that the umpires are supposed to be calling.
Yep.
And that's the end of it. Also, people saying that the throw carried him into it. No, it didn't. He took a step like towards first base and right field. He took that step so that he'd be closer to Perkins when he caught the ball, because the ball is moving faster than him catching and tagging would have. Like, that's literally the rule. Also, people saying that the ball was there before the hand made contact with the foot. No, it didn't. Blake Perkins' hand definitely hit Swanson's foot before that. But the thing is that it's also to protect the position players. It's to protect the hands, fingers, and wrists of the player sliding in head first, which it's easier to do because then you can put one hand on the bag instead of trying to keep a foot on the bag. It's easier to do that. And it's also to protect the feet, legs, and ankles of the position players, which we've seen. There's been some pretty gross injuries when it comes to that, too, on the runners and the position players. So that should have been called an obstruction, but it wasn't. So it is what it is. The Brewers still won, despite that. Okay, you mentioned Jackson Chourio. I have a potential hot take for you. The amount that we've talked really nicely about him, Wes is probably going to love this. What do you think about Jackson Chourio in the three hole with Yelich out?
Send it. I'm serious. Fuck, do it. I'm with it.
I talked about, what was it, last week or the week before, about who do we put in the five hole, and I said Jackson Chourio. And now we're having the question, who do we put in the three hole?
I mean, we know that Sal Frelick really plays center field and right field. We've seen Mitchell play center field and right field. You know who we've seen left field? It's Chourio. So just let him take a spot in the order and in the outfield, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this too, like how good he's been since June 1st. He's over 300 batting average in that time.
Yep.
Throughout this week, you gave his stats. He's been fantastic. Wes said he's seeing the ball great. I mentioned that in my video that I did earlier this week as well. He's striking out less. He's walking more. He's hitting more home runs. He's driving runs in. He's scoring. He's doing all the things that Christian Yelich does.
That's very true.
He's probably not getting on base quite as much as Christian Yelich, but not a lot of people are. So, I mean, if you're talking about who on this team outside of, you know, your leadoff guys, William Contreras and Willy Adames, who those guys' rotations, you know, their spot in the lineups are set. Who do you put in that can closest to replicate Christian Yelich? And I think the answer is Jackson Chourio, at least right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I believe that Garrett Mitchell could also be like that type of player. Mm-hmm. I also think Garrett Mitchell could be an amazing leadoff hitter. But, you know, we actually have to give him a little bit more time. He's just now getting into like 20 or 30 games played. You know, yep. it's still April for Garrett Mitchell.
It is.
So I think he eventually could be in that position. But today, the best player who has the chance to replicate what Christian Yelich does for the Brewers, I think, is Jackson Chourian.
Yeah.
Okay. Jacob Junis is becoming the guy that I thought he could when we signed him. I was really excited to see him in the starting rotation. I still think he's going to be called upon to make starts at some point. So, Todd, to go back to your James Paxton question, we've obviously seen Bryce Wilson make a ton of starts this year. I think Jacob Junis could also be moved into the starting lineup at some point as well for the starting rotation.
I can see it.
In this game, he pitched three innings, gave up a hit, a walk, and a strikeout, and no runs.
Yeah.
So, did you hear Pat Murphy's new nickname for him?
No.
Called him the Green Corvette. He's like, you take him out, you put him back in the garage. You don't drive it every day, but you have fun when you do.
I love that.
He's calling him the Green Corvette. So that's where we're at with Jacob Junis. But like I said, I do think he's going to be called upon to make starts. And then Yoel Piamps. People were like, why are you putting Piamps in instead of Trevor McGill? Trevor McGill had pitched three of the last 4 days. And right now we don't have Devin Williams. We don't even have Abner Uribe.
No.
So we're turning to Yoel Piamps, who was the Brewers' setup man last year, has mm-hmm. the stuff, pitched a super clean inning. 1-2-3 inning with two strikeouts. Now in his last five appearances, like I said when I made him my power pitcher, 4 1/3 innings in his last five appearances, no walks, one hit, 6 Ks, no runs.
Bill.
Let's talk. Oh, man. Let's talk, because I have a couple things for you here. This is the question that I posed. Is Yoel Piamps back? So looking at gotta grab him. Yeah, just a second.
Yep.
Okay, so this is one. Okay, so this is the first one. That pitch number 4, that's a beauty right there.
Oh, yeah.
And the sliders. So this is Christopher Morel batting as a right-hander. So this number 1 is a slider breaking away from him. That's a nasty pitch for him to swing and miss. Number 2, that's a sinker. That's going to be breaking in towards him. So it's going to start out looking like a strike and then break in towards him, fold it off. And that pitch number 4, 95, dotted on the corner, that's beautiful.
Oof.
That's nasty Yoel Piamps right there. And then, oh, that's us. And then Dansby Swanson. So Piamps is working the slider off the plate, gets a swinging strike, challenges Dansby Swanson, didn't catch up to it after seeing some sliders. Pitch number 4, not his best, but comes back with another strike, gets a foul on a slider, which is, again, going to be breaking away from a right-handed hitter. And then again, painted 95 miles an hour on the edge of the strike zone.
Made him look silly.
I think we're back to being in a position where we can trust Yoel Piamps with the high leverage.
Dude, it's starting to feel. I mean, I gave Hobie credit. Now he's going to have to stack a couple, obviously. We're not just going to say he's back. Hopefully, Hobie is turning a corner at this point. Peguero has been decent this year, but if he can get if Milner can get back, if Peguero can continue to do what he's been doing, and if Piamps can continue to do what he's doing, and Peguero can get back to where he was last year, and we still have the weapons of Jared Koenig, Hudson, and Jacob Junis in the bullpen, and getting Devin Williams back, which is going to feel like a trade,
and DL Hall.
And D.L. Hall.
And Joe Ross.
Yeah, geez, I forgot about him too. Jesus Christ. We should not be this good, honestly. We really shouldn't, if we're being honest with ourselves. Well, Brewers should not be on the verge of 60 wins right now. That's ridiculous, dude. Holy crap. Either way, the bullpen is an absolute strength for this team. The offense just got to keep playing with speed, and yeah, we'll see what's going on. But we do have some trade targets to talk about, Tyler.
Yes, sir. So let's do that. Actually, no, let me just lay out what's next really quick.
Yep.
So for next Wednesday, next week we will be back on Wednesday. Next week we're going to have 3 versus Miami and 3 versus Atlanta. So we've got a couple NL East matchups.
Yes, yes.
So I'm going to say 5-1. Sweep of Miami, and then I would like to take 2 or 3 from Atlanta in our building.
We're back at home, home cooking. Forgot to mention that we played all 5 of these games on the road. Feel bad for not saying that. So improve the home, the road record. Back at home where the Brewers have been good, get some home cooking, 6-game series. I'm with you with the 5-1. They go 4-1 and 5-1 coming out of the All-Star break. And if they make a trade, doesn't matter what the damn trade is. You know, people are going to overreact if it's not one of the biggest name guys. They make a trade and get Devin Williams back. Bro, it's about to be fucking on, dude.
I'm ready to go. Cool. I'm ready to go.
It's all about to be on.
And if we get the good news that we're getting about Christian Yelich, that he's going to do rest and rehab, yeah, and that this injury list stint should be shorter than his first one, we're getting some better news than we were hearing yesterday on Christian Yelich.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay. Now let's get into trade targets.
You want me to start? We start with offense?
Okay. So we have 4 categories. We kind of broke this down. We took a little bit of inspiration from our Bucks offseason targets that we did for free agency and for the draft. So we looked at roles, and we did offense, defense, starting pitching, and relievers. So we have 4 categories here. So we can go through these. Wes asked, do you think they'll move Yelich to DH if he does come back? I think they'll probably try to use him as a DH a little more often.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd said, my son and I are going to the Saturday Marlins game. Sweet, have fun, and bring home a dub, Todd.
Yep, those are all the things.
Okay, so let's talk offense first. Now, I won't give my guy right away because I am going to go to you first, but when I looked at offense for the Brewers, I think they need a little bit more power, which could possibly become from a resurgent Rhys Hoskins if we could see William Contreras bounce back. Garrett Mitchell, if he can kind of get into form, I think Garrett Mitchell has some sneaky power. And then Pat Murphy just unprompted mentioned Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when discussing Yelich's injury. And he's joking about it, but everybody's kind of like, okay, but I mean, why not? Like, nobody's going to be mad if we trade for Vlad Guerrero Jr. Todd said he's getting the sweet Hawaiian shirts. Nice. Enjoy that. I was at the game earlier this year, so I got the Giannis jersey this year, which I'm pretty happy about. But
nice.
All righty. Todd, have fun. Jake, give me your offensive trade target.
So,
lefty killer Gary is another good one too, Wes. That's fair to bring up.
Could be Gary.
Good point.
But it's weird that you bring up Vlad Guerrero Jr., and I am not shitting when I tell everybody this. I wrote this list down before the news of Yelich's injury. I was like, why not? Let's go get Vlad Guerrero Jr. He's a guy that is an arbitration year this year. He had arbitration this year before this season. He got 19.9. He won versus the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays offered 18.5. He won and got 19.9. He is a free. He has arbitration again this next season, so we would have to pay.
Yep.
And then he's a free agent in 2026. But if you're on an Osseo, and no, I'm not going to be one of those people that complains about the money and all that stuff. I'm not going to do that because that's not my job. I'm not going to spend somebody else's money. Okay.
Yep.
What I am going to do is I'm going to say, if you're in a situation right now where you got a young team and you consistently overachieve, you have an opportunity to go get a young guy that you have control of next season. You could see what happens, and maybe he loves Milwaukee and you never really know. Why not? Let's go get him, right? This guy's hitting 296 this year, has a 366 on base percentage, a 488 slug, an 854 OPS. He has 18 home runs and 62 RBIs. And for a guy like me who's an old grandpa and remembers his dad, he was one of my favorite players on the baseball game. I still vividly see the highlight of the ball bouncing on the ground and his dad crushing it for a single. And I was like, yeah, I love that guy. He's awesome. So I would love Vlad Guerrero Jr. on the Brewers. I think that would be absolutely a great fit.
Okay. So the guy that I have is a frequent trade partner of the Milwaukee Brewers from the Tampa Bay Rays. I went with Isak Paredes.
Oh.
So he's batting 250. as an on-base percentage of .352, slugging .445 for a .798 OPS. He has 16 home runs. He can play both corner infield spots. So he could play first base, or he could back up Joey Ortiz at third base, and obviously DH. So I think having a little bit of positional versatility would be great. He's respectable defensively. He's not great, but he's respectable defensively. And unfortunately, he would command a pretty decent price. He's arbitration eligible starting next year, which could lower the price a smidge. But I think the Brewers would probably rather, you know, or the Rays would probably rather deal with the Brewers than to trade him to, say, like the Yankees and trade him in division or something like that. So I think Isak Paredes would be a great offensive target for the Brewers.
So I have one more on offense here, and it is also a guy from the Rays. And it was a guy that won the AL batting title last year, and his name is Yandy Diaz. Guy that could play first base, play third base, like you said. He's having a down year this year, so are the Rays. He's hitting .273, .329 on base, .396 slugs, .726 OPS. He has 8 home runs and 46 RBIs. He has lots and lots of postseason experience, which is something that I was taking into consideration on offense. 6 straight years he's been into the postseason, 1 with Cleveland, 5 straight with the Tampa Bay Rays. And I looked at his contract. He's getting paid $8 million this year. He's $10 million in 2025. He has a club option in 2026 for $12 million, and then he's a free agent in 2027. So this would be a move where you trade for him. You wouldn't have to just immediately get rid of him. I think Yandy Diaz makes a little bit of sense. So postseason experience, a guy that can play multiple positions, I can see it.
Okay, I like that. All right, let's go to defense. Who do you think would be a good defensive addition for the Milwaukee Brewers?
This guy is probably my second least likely guy to get traded for on my list, but I did put Luis Robert Jr. on here from the White Sox. He had 38 home runs last year and also had 172 strikeouts, so he's a home run strikeout guy. But in terms of defense and why I picked him, I thought of a guy that would replace the production that we get from Yelich. Yelich is a pretty decent glove and an okay arm, and that's what I would consider Luis Robert Jr. He's in the 65th percentile for arm. He does have tons of speed, so he can make up a lot of ground. And he's in the 80th percentile for range this year for defense. I will say I take some of the stats from the White Sox like a grain of salt because they are just freaking terrible, dude.
They're bad. Yeah, they're bad.
They're literally on pace, I believe. I believe I read that right. They're on pace to break the loss record. Which is ridiculous when you consider that they have 2 starters on the trade block who are pretty damn good.
Pretty good, yeah.
So, I mean, this year he has 12 home runs and 69 strikeouts. Yeah. Nice but not nice, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he has a hefty contract, $15 million this year, and then he has a club option at 26 and 27 for $20 million. So that's pretty expensive. He literally would be a replacement for Yelich. He has an okay arm, good range. He has some power, and he's expensive. So, I mean, when I thought of it, I was like, makes sense to me. I will just give my other defense real quick. The other one is Jazz Chisholm. I don't believe that he's going to be coming to the Brewers. I think a bigger time contender is going to be scooping him up. But just wanted to mention him as a just in case.
Yeah, I've also seen some concerns. Team have concerns about his health and also his attitude. So
yeah,
not necessarily something I'm in a rush to bring to the Brewers. I think you're going to like my guy a lot more. So I looked at the Brewers. They're honestly, they really don't need defensive help.
No.
They're pretty set defensively. They're number 4 in team defensive runs saved, only behind Cleveland, Kansas City, and Toronto. So they also rank number 1 in range runs above average and number 2 in outs above average. So defensively, the Brewers really can't get much better than they already are.
Yeah.
That said, I would ask for the Brewers, this would potentially be a tough addition because there's no guarantee that the Diamondbacks are going to be sellers because they are only a game and a half out of the last wild card spot. But I'm looking at Christian Walker.
Oh, he was on my list last year.
I know he was. That's why I knew you'd like that one. He is number 8 in Major League Baseball total in runs prevented. Wow. And outs above average. He is the top first baseman in both categories. So my only defensive target would be Christian Walker.
Very nice. Nicely done. I do like that one.
In either one of these situations, if you keep Jake Bowers on the team, you can use him in the outfield while Christian Yelich is coming back.
Yeah.
Okay. Starters. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to go back to Michael's question. Michael asked about Eric Fetty. I posed Eric Fetty and Tyler Anderson to Jake back at the end of May.
He did. He did do that.
I'm just here to pat myself on the back just as a podcaster. You know, who am I? I just have a social media thing. You know, I'm not a journalist, you know, whatever else people have tried to say when I say stuff on the internet. But if one of these two happens, I'm going to go back to the back of May and be like, here you go. I said this a long time ago, that these are two guys the Brewers could target. And I'm going to stick with the same two.
Mm-hmm.
So Tyler Anderson is 34 years old. He's a 2.91 ERA, 11.48 whip, does have a $13 million salary for 2024 and 2025.
Yep.
So if I'm the Brewers and I'm considering a trade for Tyler Anderson, I'm asking the Angels to include cash or give him to us for basically nothing.
Yep.
Brewers are going to pick up the salary. Eric Fetty is similar, but at a much lower price at $7.5 million for 2024 and 2025. He has a 2.98 ERA and an 11.13 whip, having easily the best year of his career at 31 on the worst team that he's ever played for.
Yep.
So out of these two, I would probably go with Eric Fetty just because he's a little bit younger and a little bit cheaper. Yep. So that's the one that I'm looking at. But what else are you looking at for starters?
Yeah, so I also have Tyler Anderson and Eric Fetty. So when it comes to Anderson, he has a 4.4 war. We're not big war guys. But like you said, he has the 2.91 ERA. He has 123 and two-thirds innings pitched in 20 games this season, so 89 Ks in there. So he's more of a contact pitcher, but a guy that eats innings, and that's exactly what we need to try to save our bullpen for the postseason. And you go to Eric Fetty. 7-3 record this year, a 4.7 war, which is pretty impressive for a starting pitcher on such a bad team. He has a 2.98 ERA. He has 117 and two-thirds innings pitched in 20 games this year as well, and 104 Ks. So he's a guy that can absolutely sit, as you stand up there and sit you right back down, right? My next guy, I have Jack Flaherty, a guy that's familiar with the NL Central. I think it would be hilarious to one-up the Cardinals and take a guy that used to play on their team and trade for him this year. He's having a good year for Detroit, 2.95 ERA, a 0.96 whip, 106 and two-thirds innings pitched, and 133 Ks. He is a free agent after this year, so I think that's why there's a little bit of an outside chance that the Brewers can kind of scoop in and take him as like a rental this year. Garrett Crochet is my last guy. He's going to probably not be on our team, but I wanted to put him on here just to kind of extend all options. 6-7 record, a 3.07 ERA, 0.97 whip, 157 Ks. He still has arbitration for two more years. So if you get him, you get him under control for two more seasons. So I think that would be exciting. But yeah, two guys from the White Sox, guy from the Tigers, a guy from the Angels. Those are all teams that are selling. And there's not many this year, honestly. It's pretty tight knit in the NL. A lot of teams still have a chance at the playoffs. So we're going to have to probably look to the AL to try to get somebody.
Yep. Or potentially overpay, which is something I really don't want to do.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Which is why I'm actually like pretty on board with my relief pitcher target, who we'll get to in a second. But we have another guy that we both have on the list. So, Jake, what else do you have on Tanner Scott besides the fact that he has a 1.24 ERA, a .985 whip, and 17 saves?
Yeah, he also has 18 holds. He has 44 and two-thirds innings pitched, and he has 51 Ks. This guy throws a fastball at an average of about 97 miles per hour, and he throws a disgusting slider. So, I mean, I don't know what it is. And when I was looking up trade targets, I was doing a bunch of research. I was like, he's a lefty, bro. The Brewers have been doing stuff with lefties this year, i.e. Hudson and Koenig. They've just been doing stuff with lefty guys out of the bullpen. We get Devin Williams back. You then have right-handed Devin Williams. You have right-hander and Piamps, Paguero, I mean, you have McGill, you have all your right-handers, you get this guy that makes the right-lefty thing kind of evened out, and you could just situationally just destroy everybody with our bullpen and our pitching lab.
That's the thing is, if you look at, like, we remember some of the disgusting bullpens where the Brewers could go, like, Corey Knebel to Jeremy Jeffress to Josh Hader. And then we had Corey Knebel and Devin Williams and Josh Hader. We could potentially have this season Brian Hudson, Trevor McGill, and Devin Williams, which would be just disgusting.
You're getting a lot of different pitches.
Dude, if you – when Devin Williams is back and the Brewers can go 7-8-9 of Hudson, McGill, and Williams, that is nasty.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you throw Tanner Scott into that mix, you could be like, all right, Colin, go get us 5 innings. And then be like, here you go. Here's Hudson, Scott, McGill, and Williams. Good luck touching a baseball in the next 4 innings.
You're not wrong.
That would be a disgusting thing to have to face in the playoffs. Be like, dude, like, okay, great. We didn't score on their starter in 5 innings. Now what?
We're gonna have a lot more shutouts.
Right? My dad said you can go back to Trevor Hoffman, too.
You could.
Being able to go through those late innings and essentially turn the game over and be like, okay, yeah, we now have like an 11% chance of getting a hit in the next 3 innings. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Would be a great thing for the Brewers to have. Now, John Axford too. The Brewers have a long list of great closers, but having like a three-inning stretch where you go three different pitchers and it's just like, okay, all three of them are giving you different things. That's tough.
Tough to deal with for sure.
Now, Tanner Scott is a free agent at the end of the year. So, yep. Like Flaherty, he is a pure rental.
He is.
So that's where we're at with Tanner Scott. Do you have any other relievers?
I do. I have one more.
All right.
His name is Carlos Estevez. He's a right-handed pitcher from the Angels. He has a 1-3 record, a 2.38 ERA, a 0.74 WHIP. He has pitched 34 innings, 32 Ks. He has 20 holds and 20 saves. So that was something that was really important to me. Is I was going through holds and saves leaders, and I looked at his contract. He is 6.7 mil this year and next year, and he is a free agent. Oh no. Just this year, he's a free agent in 2025. So, again, another rental guy. But the Angels are selling. They always sell. They literally only keep Trout hostage, which is really sad. But it is what it is, and there's a reason that Ohtani left.
Okay. So, my last one.
I'm excited for this.
I'm so mad that Dominic Catronio did this to me, that he posted the advanced stats on this guy. And I guess I'll pat myself on the back a little bit because he said only baseball sickles are going to recognize who this is.
Yep.
So this player has a 5.56 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this guy and you're going to be like, oh my God, he's 5.56 ERA. That's terrible. Why would he be a trade target? Much less a good one. This player has a fielding independent pitching, which is essentially ERA minus what the defense does, of 2.59. Talking almost a 3-run difference per 9 innings with fielding independent pitching on his ERA.
He plays for Colorado, doesn't he?
He does play for Colorado.
Oh, I knew it because of the ballpark. I instantly started thinking of Colorado.
So the player is Nick Mears from the Colorado Rockies. I think he's been more unlucky than bad. So his expected ERA is 2.99.
Okay.
That's 2.57 runs per 9 innings below what his actual ERA is.
Jesus, someone cuts it in half, dude. That's insane.
He's – okay. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to hit you with the stats of this guy when I was like, okay, I see this fielding independent pitching is way different. Like, what's going on here? He is in the 84th percentile for whiffs. He's in the 89th percentile for barrel percentage.
Hmm.
He is in the 97th percentile for hard hit percentage.
Oh, yeah.
So that means that only 3% of pitchers in baseball are giving up less hard contact than Nick Mears.
That's crazy, actually.
He has a 96.7 miles per hour average four-seam fastball. His three pitches that he uses, slider, fastball, curveball, all have above average vertical movement and below average horizontal movement.
Okay.
And he has a great slider that has a 52.6% whiff percentage.
Love it. Love to see it.
Which is ridiculous. Uh-huh. You're talking more than half of the sliders that he throws, guys swing and miss at.
I mean, that's a good thing for us if we get
them. That's insane. 52% of the sliders he throws at are swung at and missed.
Yeah.
That doesn't even take into account that any of them he can land in the strike zone.
Right.
So, looking at those advanced numbers and seeing what his expected numbers and his defense independent numbers are, mm-hmm. I'm like, this feels like a very sneaky Brewers type pickup.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick Mears is arbitration eligible starting in 2025, but I think his ERA would scare people away, and then he'd get to the Brewers and it would be like, oh, the Brewers are at it again. So I'm gonna call a shot here with Nick Mears and say this is one of the guys that the Brewers pitching lab could fix, but I think he's good already and just has a bad ERA because he plays in Colorado where they don't play great defense.
Huh. And the ballpark doesn't really help, but yeah, that's man. It. I'm almost as proud of myself for calling the team as you are for calling the player. But immediately when you said the expected, I was like, he's a Rocky, dude. A good call, though. And I will say you should feel good about it because Dominic is a baseball guy. He obviously is like a statistician for the Brewers. I'm pretty sure that's his official title.
Yep. Yep.
So the statistician for the Brewers picked the same guy as you, who's just a podcaster. Just a guy on the internet, bro, you should feel good about that. And honestly, everyone who's watching right now should invite everybody they know to watch us because we know our stuff, okay?
Yeah, so if that happens and people are going to freak out about his ERA and the Brewers trade for him, I'm going to be like, here.
Dude, honestly, just cut this video up and just share it.
Oh, that's absolutely what will happen. And I'll be like, if we get – any of the guys that I'm calling for, especially the ones that I called for like months ago, like I'm going to throw myself a parade. Like that's what's going to happen.
I agree with you.
Okay. All right. Do you have anything else?
Since we're keeping it just Brewers, I got nothing.
Okay. I believe the trade deadline is next Thursday, but I want to make sure.
Yeah. I was going to look that up too. I was going to look it up when you were talking about your last guy, but I was like, dude, you've been pumping this guy up all day, man. I got to hear about this.
Oh, let's see. The trade deadline, I thought it was the 2nd, which would be last Friday.
That'd be Friday, wouldn't it?
The trade deadline, oh, July 30th.
Oh.
So it's next Wednesday? Next Tuesday. Oh. Next Tuesday at 5 o'clock Central Time is the trade deadline. That's weird. Usually it's like 3 o'clock. Okay. So, other than that, next week we will be back on Wednesday, so we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming next Wednesday. The Brewers are off tonight, so we will be back to see the Brewers tomorrow. Todd, if you're still watching, have fun on Saturday, and let's see if the Brewers can win 5 out of 6 at home.
Hell yeah.
All righty. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, for the comments, and we will see you guys next week.